The Tom Woods Show, episode 1254.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, it's been 10 years since the financial crisis, and your friends are still telling you, you naive libertarian, why don't you know deregulation caused the crisis? How much longer are you going to let them get away with that? Not one more day, my friends. Now you got my free ebook, The Deregulation Boogeyman. Check it out at regulationmyths.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I've got an interesting episode for you today. If you're on my email list, and how could you not be at this point, you got a little peek into what I'm going to be talking about today just yesterday. As you may have heard, I have an email list. I have two of them, actually. One of them is my libertarian list that's more or less attached to this show. And I send out, I like to think, pretty juicy stuff on a regular basis. So you can hop on. The best way these days to hop on is to get my new ebook, The Deregulation Boogeyman, that I just mentioned at the beginning of this episode. And you can do that over at regulationmyths.com. That gets you that free ebook and it puts you on my list. Well, anyway, there's a big, interesting academic scandal that has come out over the past week or so, or maybe 2 weeks, pertaining to what, I guess it was three academics have been up to over the past year. They've been submitting nonsense, crazy papers to journals in the areas of, let's say, identity studies like gender theory or critical theory or cultural studies, stuff like that. And they've been getting them successfully published in top journals and going through peer review. And these articles are crazy. In fact, they're so crazy, you can't let your kids listen to this episode either. That's two episodes in a row. See, I talk about academia, and you can't even have your kids listen to it anymore. That's what we've been reduced to at this point. So I'm going to go through a few examples of what they submitted. But let's start off with who they are. Because, you know, I know that for a long time, I've heard people who have more, let's say, left-leaning sympathies within the libertarian movement try to claim that political correctness is just a right-wing boogeyman and nobody really should be worried about it. That's just silly and stop getting so excited. But I would hope that at this point, most people realize that was a mistake. Like, I mean, how could you be more wrong than that? It is part of an overall totalitarian impulse. That could not be clearer. Look at the people who spread it. These are not people who are interested in your point of view. They absolutely are not. These are very often people who cheer on violence, or these are the people who were idiotically pounding on the doors and windows of a Jordan Peterson event. Like, that's not how normal people act. There's something very screwy about this. And it does matter to libertarians. If these people ever took power, how would they rule? If this is the way they think, how would they rule us? How could that not be relevant? I don't know. I never get the left libertarians. They don't make any sense to me. Anyway, these three people you may not have heard of. They are James Lindsay, Helen Pluckrose, and Peter Boghossian. And they're all academics. I guess Lindsay is a former academic. And I know that Boghossian is one of the so-called new atheists. So he's not exactly Edmund Burke here. Helen Pluckrose describes herself as a secularist and a liberal humanist. So these are people who, in some ways, are in sympathy with the social justice movement. But they're saying that we're not doing ourselves any favors and we're discrediting the work that we do by promoting ridiculous scholarship that says crazy things, that uses ridiculous methods, where the data is obviously faulty or non-existent or absurd. And they just go down all the different procedural aspects that you would want to observe in writing a good research paper. And they wanted to more or less systematically undermine or ignore every one of these requirements of a good paper and see if they could get published. Now, of these three academics, the two men back in, let's say, maybe early to mid-2017 did something kind of like this, and they got attacked for it because it looks like it was more or less a pay-to-publish journal that they submitted it to, and it wasn't a top journal and this and that, and so people hit back at them. Well, in this project, which is entirely different from that one, they openly admit and concede the shortcomings of their earlier effort. This one was much more systematic, involved far more papers, and submitted to a range of respected journals in each of these fields. And when you hear the subject matter and the alleged methods used in these papers, you're going to be shocked, even though you think nothing could shock you at this point. You think, I've heard it all, so nothing's going to shock me. So now let me read, I'm going to be reading a lot from an essay that the three of them wrote explaining their project. Now, by the way, their project, unfortunately, came to a premature end very recently. And the reason is there is an excellent Twitter account. I think it's called New Real Peer Review. And I don't know if that's actually the Twitter handle or not. But if you do a search on Twitter, you'll find it. I love this account. This account simply tweets out excerpts from crazy academic journal articles. It's absolutely great. Sometimes when I'm out of ideas for my email newsletter, I just go over to their Twitter account and I say, what crazy nonsense are they tweeting out? Well, apparently what happened was they found one of the papers that these three successfully got published. And of course, if a paper is successfully published, you don't assume it's a spoof. So this Twitter account thought, oh boy, we've found a live one here. Look at this crazy journal article that got published. And so that started to get a lot of attention for that particular article. And then New Real Peer Review also found that the author did not actually exist and the institution the author claimed to be with did not actually exist. And so at that point, their whole project began to unravel because the editor of the journal at that point launched an inquiry into the article. So it wasn't the insanity in the article itself. That's fine. Sail right through. It was these questions about the authorship of the article. And so anyway, they decided they had to abort the project. So they had a bunch of other articles in the queue, in process, and I'll cover even a couple of those as we go through. So anyway, I'm going to link at tomwoods.com/1254 to this very thorough essay that they wrote up about the what's, the whys, the hows of this project. So here's what one of the paragraphs says. Our paper writing methodology always followed a specific pattern. It started with an idea that spoke to our epistemological or ethical concerns with the field, and then sought to bend the existing scholarship to support it. The goal was always to use what the existing literature offered to get some little bit of lunacy or depravity to be acceptable at the highest levels of intellectual respectability within the field. Therefore, each paper began with something absurd or deeply unethical, or both, that we wanted to forward or conclude. We then made the existing peer-reviewed literature do our bidding in the attempt to get published in the academic canon. All right, now again, what I want to do is read a paragraph or two from this essay, and then we're going to go through some of the actual papers that they submitted and got published. They got 7 papers published in 1 year. Which is an amazing feat. I mean, it's sometimes said that if you get 7 academic papers published in as many years, then you're on track for tenure. So they were able to do this with nonsense papers, absolute nonsense papers in 10 months. So you don't even have to actually know anything, apparently, to qualify for tenure, because you can just publish nonsense and it'll be accepted. You don't have to know anything. So here in these couple of paragraphs, they're going to give very, very, very brief summaries of some of the papers that they got accepted. And then we'll go through and look at them in a little bit more detail. So what they found after doing all this, and here's again a quotation from them, we now have good reasons to believe that if we just appropriate the existing literature in the right ways, and there always seems to be a citation or vein of literature that makes it possible, we can say almost any politically fashionable thing we want. The underlying questions in every single case were the same. What do we need to write, and what do we need to cite? All of our citations are real, by the way, to get this academic madness published as high scholarship. So they wrote 20 papers. They got 7 of those papers accepted. 4 of them have been published online. 3 more have been accepted without having had time to see publication through. This can take months. 7 papers were still in play when they had to call a halt. So two have been revised and resubmitted and are awaiting a decision. And usually a judgment of revise and resubmit winds up ultimately in publication. One is still under its first review. Four are left hanging with no time to submit them to journals after rejection or revise and resubmit or reject and resubmit. Six of them were retired as fatally flawed or beyond repair. They got four invitations to engage in peer review themselves of other people's papers on the basis of their own supposedly exemplary scholarship. So understand, they've submitted nonsense papers that make no sense and say utterly preposterous things. And on the basis of that, journal editors have come to them and said, would you like to review some papers for us? That's how far gone these people are. You cannot parody that. Well, I guess you can, but it's hard. One of the papers they submitted, the one about rape culture in dog parks, gained special recognition for excellence from the journal in which it was published. That's Gender, Place, and Culture. This is a highly ranked journal that leads the field of feminist geography, and the journal honored it as one of 12 leading pieces in feminist geography as part of the journal's 25th anniversary celebration. That's the state of things. The papers spanned gender studies, masculinity studies, queer studies, sexuality studies, psychoanalysis, critical race theory, critical whiteness theory, fat studies, sociology, and educational philosophy. And as I said, they engaged in wildly crazy methodologies, making crazy claims. So we have this. I'm just reading. Our papers also present very shoddy methodologies, including incredibly implausible statistics. And then they cite papers for each one of these. So Dog Park had wildly implausible statistics, making claims not warranted by the data, and ideologically motivated qualitative analyses. Questionable qualitative methodologies such as poetic inquiry and autoethnography were incorporated. Many papers advocated highly dubious ethics, including training men like dogs, punishing white male college students for historical slavery by asking them to sit in silence on the floor in chains during class and to be expected to learn from the discomfort, and by the way, also not have their emails returned by the professor. Celebrating morbid obesity as a healthy life choice, and on and on. Now, there's some stuff that you'll see in here that I feel weird even mentioning, and probably have to have a couple of drinks between now and the end of the episode if I'm going to tell you about them at all. And then finally, before we proceed to the papers themselves, we have the three authors saying that what upsets them, and this goes to show, again, these three authors are very much part of the Enlightenment tradition. These are not reactionaries by any means. Their claim is that the problem is that the scholarship that they are attacking is scholarship in opposition to science itself, that the idea that data gathering, statistical analysis, hypothesis testing, falsifying, replicating results, that this is a better way to arrive at conclusions about the reality around us than other approaches are. And they say, for grievance studies scholars, science itself and the scientific method are deeply problematic, if not outright racist and sexist, and need to be remade to forward grievance-based identitarian politics over the impartial pursuit of truth. So let's run through a few of the papers here. The Dog Park paper is called Human Reactions to Rape Culture and Queer Performativity in Urban Dog Parks in Portland, Oregon. Now, by the way, if you're not familiar with academic journal articles in these fields, that sounds entirely like the kinds of articles you'll encounter there. That is not, that's one of the ways it got published, was precisely because it did not sound particularly bizarre or out of step with the existing array of articles. Human Reactions to Rape Culture and Queer Performativity in Urban Dog Parks in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, if the government is not subsidizing higher education, where would we be, right? So this gets published in Gender, Place, and Culture. The thesis of it was that dog parks are rape-condoning spaces and a place of rampant canine rape culture and systemic oppression against the oppressed dog, through which human attitudes to both problems can be measured. This provides insight into training men out of the sexual violence and bigotry to which they are prone. So they say the purpose of this paper was to see if journals would accept arguments that should be clearly ludicrous and unethical if they provide an unfalsifiable way to perpetuate notions of toxic masculinity, heteronormativity, and implicit bias. And then what they've done is they've excerpted from the peer reviewers' comments. So there will be two or three peer reviewers for each article. And you get a sense of these articles are not being grudgingly published. There's incredible enthusiasm for these articles. So this is a wonderful paper, incredibly innovative, rich in analysis, and extremely well-written and organized. The paper, by the way, claimed that the researchers had tactfully inspected the genitals of slightly fewer than 10,000 dogs while interrogating owners as to their sexuality. Again, with the first reviewer, "I believe this intellectually and empirically exciting paper must be published and congratulate the author on the research done and the writing." Another reviewer says, "Thank you for the opportunity to review a really interesting paper. I think it will make an important contribution to feminist animal geography, with some minor revisions as described below." Then the editor of Gender, Place, and Culture wrote them a letter saying that on the 25th year of publication, they want to publish 12 major pieces, and they say, "We would like to publish your piece as a way of honoring our 25 years in publication, because your piece draws attention to so many themes from the past scholarship informing feminist geographies, and also shows how some of the work going on now can contribute to enlivening the discipline. So in this sense, we think it is a good piece for the celebrations." Okay, so it's a fake paper. It's crazy. It's insane. Any normal person immediately sees that it's fake and insane, and that's what happened. Then we have the fat bodybuilding paper, which is called "Who Are They to Judge? Overcoming Anthropometry and a Framework for Fat Bodybuilding." So this was published in the journal Fat Studies, which, believe it or not, in this area, that's a major journal. So the thesis is that it's only oppressive cultural norms that make society regard the building of muscle rather than fat admirable, and that bodybuilding and activism on behalf of the fat could be benefited by including fat bodies displayed in non-competitive ways. And so the purpose of this paper was to see if journals would accept arguments that are ludicrous and clearly dangerous to health if they support the reigning ideas of body positivity, cultural constructivism, and so on. Now let's read some of the reviewer comments. "The essay addresses bodybuilding as a stigmatizing activity toward the fat body, and presents fat bodybuilding as a way to disrupt the cultural space of traditional bodybuilding. The topic of this essay is certainly novel and addresses an issue relevant to a disenfranchised demographic." Then we read, they've more favorable comments, but then this is my favorite thing. Here's one of the criticisms of the paper. "The use of the term final frontier is problematic in at least two ways. First, the term frontier implies colonial expansion and hostile takeover and the genocidal erasure of indigenous peoples. Find another term." This is the criticism of the paper. All right, now I just don't know if I should read this one. I just don't know. If you think there is any chance that something I'm about to say may scandalize you, then you really need to turn this off now. I don't want to get complaints because you have been warned. You understand? You have been warned. If you say, "Woods, this is highly inappropriate," I agree. Don't blame me. I'm just the messenger. Okay? But I think you need to know how bad things are. Now, I just don't think I can bring myself to read the title of this particular paper. I don't think I can. But I'm going to read you the thesis of the paper. Yes, I am doing this for the sake of what's good and beautiful in the world. I have to do it. So here we go. If you have kids in the car and they hear this, that's not my fault. I warned you. Here's the thesis of the next paper, accepted and published at the journal Sexuality and Culture. Here's the thesis: that it is suspicious that men rarely anally self-penetrate using sex toys, and that this is probably due to fear of being thought homosexual and bigotry against trans people. Encouraging them to engage in receptive, penetrative anal eroticism will decrease transphobia and increase feminist values. All right, here are the reviewer comments. This article is an incredibly rich and exciting contribution to the study of sexuality and culture, and particularly the intersection between masculinity and anality. This contribution, to be certain, is important, timely, and worthy of publication. Then the reviewer says, "Sorry for so many questions, but this paper is so rich and exciting. I'm just overwhelmed by so many new questions, which is a sign of a marvelous paper." Then the other reviewer says, "Thank you for this exciting research," etc. All right, now this goes, so you can get a sense then of the other sorts of papers that we're talking about here. A bit tamer, we have Moon Meetings and the Meaning of Sisterhood, a poetic portrayal of lived feminist spirituality, accepted by the Journal of Poetry Therapy, with no requested revisions, no comments. The thesis of this paper? No clear thesis. A rambling poetic monologue of a bitter, divorced feminist, much of which was produced by a teenage angst poetry generator, before being edited into something slightly more realistic, which is then interspersed with self-indulgent, auto-ethnographical reflections on female sexuality and spirituality, written entirely in slightly under 6 hours. Purpose of the paper: to see if journals will accept rambling nonsense if it is sufficiently pro-woman, implicitly anti-male, and thoroughly anti-reason. And then how about this? This is accepted by the publication Aphelia. Title: Our Struggle is My Struggle, Solidarity Feminism as an Intersectional Reply to Neoliberal and Choice Feminism. Now, this is part of Chapter 12 of Volume 1 of Mein Kampf. That's basically what it is, but they just switched in fashionable buzzwords. And so they wanted to see if they could make anything grievance-related, in this case, part of a chapter of Mein Kampf, acceptable to the journals. And the answer is yes, accepted. And they've got reviewer comments. And it just goes down from there. You really need to see these for yourself, I think. And so I'm going to link to this again, tomwoods.com/1254. You really need to see this for yourself. This is really happening. Now, the authors of these papers are protesting that, look, we're not saying that there's nothing good coming out of these disciplines, but I don't know, if top journals are applauding crazy nonsense, then I'm inclined to think that there is nothing good coming out of them. Could you imagine physics publishing papers like this? I would say physics obviously is no more. This can't be real physics. Something's happened here. So I don't share the optimism of the authors of the papers, but I don't know what the conclusion of this is, other than you thought insane people were running the show, but now you know. Well, actually, you already knew, didn't you? But maybe if these people had the potential for embarrassment, this would embarrass them. It should embarrass them. These were fake, made-up papers, and you cheered them. These were papers that used completely illegitimate methods that had ludicrous data, and you accepted them because they fit in with your pre-existing ideas. There you go. It proves everything that's ever been said about any of this stuff. Whew. All right. Now, listen, before we finish today, there are a couple of episodes of the show that I want to bring to your attention in particular, because there's a possibility you may have missed them. And I think they're really worth listening to. Just the titles that I gave to them might have been not all that attention-grabbing. And for those of you who pick and choose the episodes, you may have missed these. So definitely when you're done with this one, there are two I'd like you to go take a look at. One of them is episode 1242. And that's a solo episode like this one. A lot of people say they like when I critique an article. Well, you got it. There I critique a video, but it's by a critic of libertarianism, and most of these are not very good, and that's a fun one. So 1242, tomwoods.com/1242 is the first one. Second one that you definitely got to make sure you hear is 1244, and that's my episode with Michael Rechtenwald, the professor everybody shuns. Some people are saying that's in the top 10 best episodes ever, so you got to listen to that. That's a guy who's had a complete transformation in the way he looks at the world and has moved over to our side after being hard on the other side for his whole life. And it's incredible. So tomwoods.com/1244. Now remember, the thing with iTunes is that it'll only put up there my most recent 301 episodes. That's just the rule. So if you're looking for the previous episodes, eventually I'll put archive stuff up there and figure out a way to do that. But for now, you can find them all at tomwoods.com/episodes. You can listen to them using the player there. That's one thing. Another thing to note is that with my email lists, with both of them, I shoot to get them in your inbox. But sometimes your email program thinks it knows better than you do what you want to read. You signed up for my newsletter, but it's going to try and keep it from you one way or another. Gmail will sometimes put it in the promotions folder, so you got to check that. Sometimes it winds up in spam. Stuff like that. So you got to whitelist it. You can go into Google and type whitelist, and that'll show you how you can make sure that particular emails from particular senders always reach you. And that, yes, I wouldn't have signed up for it if I didn't want to read it. And of course, it's not spam. Spam is either unsolicited email or email that was solicited, but it winds up being on a different topic than what you requested. Well, my email lists are neither of those. So from time to time, you will have to look through and say, oh, yeah, there it is. It's in the spam folder or it's in the promotions folder. I'm doing my best. I'm going to move my main list over to a different email autoresponder service, which I believe will improve the inboxing percentage, the number of emails that actually reach your inbox. Now, most of you do get it right in your inbox and you open it up and read it because you know I'm going to not waste your time and it'll be worth reading. But for some of you, I know it's in the spam or it's in the promotions folder. Trust me, this is every email marketer's struggle, is figuring out how to get that email into your inbox. And as some of you may know, part of the reason I use the word smackers is because it's kind of funny, but also because I made that into my trademark word so that if I ever refer to money in my emails, it won't be jarring for you to see the word smackers. But if you use dollars or even have a dollar sign, this sometimes makes email services think it must be spam. And so I have to, if I say smackers, there's a better chance that the email will wind up in your inbox. Can you believe I have to navigate these ridiculous mazes of complications? But I indeed do. So anyway, that's what I have to say for today. If you are appreciating this stuff, if you say, man, that Woods produces good material for me every single gosh darn weekday, then join me as a supporting listener. You get such great benefits over there, and you're joining an amazing community of folks. The website for that is supportinglisteners.com. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.